Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos. But that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk.
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Luke Owen and I am joined by El Fakador, Laurie Blake.
The one and only. Hey, hi. And
this is your first time on the intros and outros.
It is indeed.
For the Wrestle Ramble podcast.
I'm welcome to the intro, me.
It's very exciting. So obviously this is our SmackDown review episode of the Wrestle Ramble. Quite a lot to get into. Talk about the Miz versus Daniel Bryan and a couple of issues we might have with Samoa Joe reading out a letter. But
before
we get into that, I want to have a quick Rusev hey I wanted to give you. This one comes in from David De La Cruz, who writes in to say, "Hi, Luke and Ollie." I'm assuming he means you as well. "I do have a few Rusev hays to share with you. I used to work as a store manager at GameStop a few years ago. Every year they would have a conference talking about the season's biggest games with presentations from Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, and others. One of the nights at the expo with..." Try that again. "One of the nights there was an expo of all the major games." Okay, with you now. "Every year, there was always the WWE game booth where we could meet WWE stars for pictures and signings. In my tenure, I had three that I only saw, and I wish I could have met the last one, and you'll see why. On my first year, I met Kelly Kelly, who was very nice and very pretty. What was interesting to me is that in the signing, she was downing Red Bulls. At the time, I didn't really understand how intense their schedules were. Also in that first year, I met Hulk Hogan, who was promoting his Xbox Kinect game." Did he have an Xbox Kinect game?
Oh, I don't know. Was he a secret character in that Milo game that What's-His-Face was making?
I have no idea. I didn't even know he had one. He was a nice guy. I felt like such a mark when he called me brother. What was interesting to me at that signing was that I saw his daughter there behind the booth waiting for him, but realised it was his girlfriend. That was a bit awkward. In my second year, I met The Miz, very nice guy, and always dressed in an amazing suit. What was cool is when I was waiting in line to someone got him to do a Miz promo to the people around. At the time, I didn't really appreciate it. I was a huge wrestling fan, but it was not the hardcore fan I am now. But in my third year, and this is the one he didn't get to meet, was the Ultimate Warrior.
Aww.
He was there, and the line was super long. I didn't end up waiting for the signing. In hindsight, I wish I would have waited. All my interactions with the wrestlers were great experiences. Thank you for taking the time to read my long email. Love you guys. Content. Love the Ramble Talk. Thank you, David De La Cruz. Oh, because that would have been when he was on 2K15?
No, it was it 16?
16, maybe?
When he did all the adverts.
Yeah, and because he was the DLC, the pre-order character.
Yeah, what are we on now? 2K19, so 2K18, 17. I think it was 16.
Heck yeah. Because that was that was his big return to WWE. He was entered into the Hall of Fame, and then died a couple, and died the next day. My basically, God. Yeah.
I met the Miz years ago at a gaming event, actually. So I was working for a games TV company at the time as a cameraman, and we were filming an interview for the WWE game that was out at the time. This must have been like 2K14, 13, something like that. And the Miz was there. Our presenter was quite well known for being like a big personality. She was quite loud, quite vivacious, and tried to meet the Miz on his level. And it became this game of escalating personality, in which it started at this level of like being like Ollie Davis level,
yeah,
talking. And then raised and raised and raised to the point where they were just screaming at each other doing this interview. It was the funniest thing.
Because you've done quite a few of the camera stuff for 2K games and things.
Yeah,
like
that. A couple of years ago I did one for 2K16? No, 17 it would have been at the time. So 2K17 I did working with a company called Explosive Allen. And through 2K we were doing the PR tour stuff. So they did a big event for shops like Game and GameStop, in fact. And New Day were hosting that. So we made like a little promo video stuff for like our guy, our presenter, to come on and introduce the New Day. And the New Day we're going to play the game. Quite funnily, the match ended immediately.
So
I think Kofi picked himself and Xavier picked Finn Balor.
Mm.
During Balor's entrance as the demon, they were getting really into it, and Big E was doing the commentary. As they were getting really into it, Kofi comes out from the back, jumps Xavier. they fight down to the ring, get in the ring, and I think Xavier just pinned Kofi, and Kofi forgot to kick out. This whole, like, it was meant to be about a 10-minute bit of this 1-hour presentation that was going on, where the New Day would come out, play the game, and then go. So then they did that, sort of went, I didn't think that was going to go so quickly. Any questions from the audience? And then when the whole thing had finished, so they did questions and it was really nice. They did some shouts for some kids who were in the crowd and stuff like that. And then at the end, when they were trying to walk to the back, their music didn't play.
Oh, awkward.
So they were like, okay, bye. And then they were like waiting for the music. And then they were just like, okay, just going to creep to the back, creep into the back. And obviously the New Day still managed to do it with comedic grace and flair.
Absolutely. Yes, talking, they to
Flair,
to
also
met,
yeah, talking to Flair, I also filmed Ric Flair for one of these things.
Oh,
as
lovely.
Well.
Did you do Paul Heyman as well?
No, so I edited the Paul Heyman ones.
That
but
was
I didn't
it.
Yeah, I didn't do I didn't get to film the Paul Heyman ones. But apparently, the guys I was working with, Paul had to do, I think, 15 different little YouTube adverts for all the different pre orders. So it was like WWE 2K17's out, blah, 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 blah. You can pre-order it here at Game. And it was all specific for Game and GameStop and blah, 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 blah. And it was all one take. It was about a 30-second rant. And he made it up every single time, but just did it perfectly the first time.
Amazing.
And they were like, do you need any water or anything? And he was like, no, I don't need water. I need to be sweaty. It needs to look intense.
What a hero Paul Heyman is. I've got time for one more quick Rusev hey. This is from David McKenzie, who's one of our Patreon backers, one of our pledge hammers. Hi, I'm digging through all the Rusev heys. Keep the segment. So, as an update to you, there was a period in time where one of our the Swaff Nation pod Swafters wanted for us to drop the Rusev hey segments because he wasn't keen on them.
Oh, no.
And he thought that a lot of other people might be in the same vein of thinking, but they were not. So the voices were loud that we were keeping the Rusev hays. I get to go to lots of indie events and meet the wrestlers all the time. The one I remember the most, however, wasn't at a wrestling event. By trade, I'm a sound engineer and I've been on tours with many bands. And in 2012, I was at Download with a small American band when I had the chance to meet Chris Jericho as he was there with Fozzy. Now, my hearing is very important being a sound man, so I wear either earplugs or defenders, and I tend to talk out loud to myself when I work because I can't hear myself think. So I spotted Mr. Jericho and I walked over to him and I stood next wanting to tell what a big fan I was. But being that I was wearing ear defenders, I didn't quite judge how loudly I said... listen to this. There is no loudly I said, there is no way you are 6 foot tall.
I was just screaming that at Chris Jericho.
He literally whipped his head round and said, What did you say? Being young and dumb, I repeated myself. Now I'm a touch under 5'11", 180 centimetres for our European friends, and in my safety boots, I would say I'm about 6 foot. Chris was at least 3 inches shorter than me. The man he said I was with then points to me, the man I was with, he had pointed to and asked what I was doing in the VIP area, and he said, I think I should leave. He wasn't rude, but quite blunt. I never got the opportunity to tell him what a big fan I was, which was the worst part. Hope you find this funny. All the best, David.
Dude, you just made the list.
You certainly, and that's exactly what he says in his email. I was like, I think I made the list with a Rusev, hey. I really enjoyed that one.
No way, you're 6 foot tall.
Just so predictable. That's the first thing he's heard you say as well. You didn't even say, like, hello, I'm
discussing
a fan.
The tools of Jericho.
So let's dive into the SmackDown review. We've got quite a bit to discuss, not the least of which, Killian Dane's new terrible attire. Here's the show. SmackDown Live was last night. It's the go-home edition before SummerSlam this coming Sunday, and the show was really built around Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. Mm. Now, the last few weeks have been The Miz, quote, on the set of Miz and Mrs., because that's how reality TV shows are made.
Upon the set of his life.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Or he's been throwing babies at him, or he's been throwing babies up on screens, like little pictures of crying babies on
a lovely montage.
Yeah, or that he's been cutting the same promo. But in this week, they did something different. What they did is they recapped this 8-year feud that we've had between them, starting in the old version of NXT back in 2010, leading up to now. And they split this across 3 different videos. And it just further proves that WWE watches this show and takes the ideas that Ollie and I have and put them on screen. Because we were saying last week, why didn't they just do video packages that kind of like broke down the individual moments of their feud? Because I said this in the SmackDown review. My only, because I thought these were awesome. I thought these were really good and really effective in building
them. They
were great. So much better than all of the other nonsense they've done. Why they didn't spread this across multiple episodes and do more of them. Because it really does. This video essentially said, like, this feud boils down to 3 moments. NXT, Talking Smack, Daniel Bryan's back. And I'm like, there's so much more other ones. SummerSlam 2010, when Daniel Bryan interrupted, and The Miz thought he was going to be in the main event, and Daniel Bryan stole his spotlight. Bryan won his first belt off of The Miz. There's all these little moments you could really pick out from the two of them that you could have built more videos around. But I thought the videos were awesome.
The videos were, what they should have done, like you said, is spread it out and put it through, peppered it through multiple episodes. Then still had, I think you could have still had a lot of the moments that they've had so far. It was almost like every single time they did a promo, you got all the way up to the end point, and then they just went, and it's like, here's a baby! And it's like, okay, like, the baby thing works, I think, fun. Like, coming out with the baby carrier and Maurice and doing the whole, like, the Miz style, like, let's do a launch party for Miz and Mrs. Great idea. And then he's also, it's double cowardly, because his wife is there, and the baby. It just didn't need to be like, you didn't need to just reveal it was a fake baby. You didn't need to attack him. He could have just had Daniel Bryan come out for the confrontation, and then he could literally
hide behind a baby.
Like, hid behind a baby and walked out. Then you're saving the beatdown for later on. The set thing, it just didn't need to be a set. Like, they could have just gone and filmed it in the car park. Like, you know, like, they could have just gone to a shop. Miz and Maurice are out shopping, and Daniel Bryan comes in and confronts The Miz while he is filming his reality show.
It's so funny, because I got a lot of complaints last week in my SmackDown review, because I keep making fun of this he's on sets, because it is nonsense, because he's quite clearly not on set.
It's absolute gubbins.
It's absolute gubbins, and I got a lot of complaints from people saying, like, oh, you're being too critical. Of course, like, they can't actually film on the set. They can't fly him in all the time. They can't fly him back to the set. My argument has always been, like, if you can't do it, then don't. Like, if it doesn't look good, don't do it that way.
Also, if it's going to take 10 seconds to do, just ask the crew of the show to do it.
Can we, like, film it here? Yeah.
Can we not just? Can you not just film this thing and send it, and then we'll pay some money? Like, WWE is not bereft of cash.
Like, yeah, you know? Like, and it looks so rubbish with him being like, it's just in a backdrop with the logo there, because that's how reality TV shows work. And it's like, well, it just looks naff. And so if it's going to look naff, then don't do it, because it's so distracting. Oh, you just need to be in the moment. You need to, you know, let go of your, you know, let go of your critical mind. It just looks, it looks ridiculous. But
it seems dumb to then be like, you know, well, one, the show is on directly afterwards, so we know what it looks like.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if we're playing in the world where these two things exist and they reference each other, They should reference each other properly.
Yeah.
You know.
But anyway, so I thought these videos were really, really effective. Mm. And I loved the first one with the NXT recap.
That was very good.
It's not just showing the NXT footage, which works so well. It really tells us a really lovely story. You've got these talking heads between Brian and Miz, which I think were the only things I didn't particularly like, because they were very scripted. Like, it wasn't like them literally commenting on things as if it was an interview. It was like, here is your script, now you must repeat what we have written for you.
Yeah, they got much better towards the end.
Much better.
As both guys
yeah.
got angry.
Yeah.
Which is obviously what it was building towards, and that's why I had to be so carefully scripted. But it would have been nice, yeah, to just, you know, like,
just
Daniel Bryan's got a lot of opinions, and it would be quite nice to let him have them
and
kind of freely.
Yeah, and Miz can quite easily just say, okay, can you just say these things about Daniel Bryan?
Yeah.
Like, cool, away I go. Give me 5 minutes, like, and I can give you 15. Like, he's really, really good at that. So it was a bit scripted and a bit hokey, but like the footage and everything, the comments that they were making, I loved some of the stuff that that Bryan was saying in this, because they were talking about how like Daniel Bryan had been in the indie scene for 10 years, 10+ years at this point. They showed footage of him in the indies. And he was like, and I was the rookie to Miz's pro. And Miz is there going like, I've been in WWE for 5 years at this point, so I was a real seasoned veteran. It was like juxtaposition.
And he was multiple champions at the time as well. And then he went through the whole bit where, like you're saying, Brian left NXT like 0-10.
Yep,
like,
he lost all 10 of his matches.
He didn't have a win, and that's why he should have listened to his veteran.
Yeah.
And then Brian counters that, saying that, well, I did join WWE though. You were my first win.
Yeah, exactly. My first win was against you on Raw. And I thought it was a really nice touch. And he ends with this lovely line where he's like, I didn't need The Miz, but The Miz needed me. And that's a really, really nice touch. I thought this was really, really awesome. And it's great seeing those old clips of NXT.
Yeah,
it's...
I love the recap, though, where they had to be like, NXT was quite different back in the day.
It was. It's shown all the awful stuff. They're like carrying kegs and stuff, trying to sell programs and all the other nonsense they did on that show. But this really did take up a large portion of SmackDown, because you then got a match. Then you got the second of these, which was recapping that Talking Smack angle. And this, boy, how did this make me miss Talking Smack. What a great show Talking Smack was. And like, that show really did fuel a lot more interest back into this feud. Because you had, obviously, like, Daniel Bryan and Miz have always been at each other's throats while they were on the roster together. But this just almost reignited it, and it sparked so much conversation of, like, is Daniel Bryan going to return to the ring?
Yeah, yeah.
Because this really felt like it was a promo to set up a program.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing, is like, so that kind of, like, being able to build it out of a talk show, when you've got so many good talkers as well, like, the SmackDown roster is full of, or at the time especially, was full of, like, when Kevin Owens was there, was full of people who were great on the mic and great off the cuff, and, like, that is what that show was entirely designed for. And that's why you can build stuff like that straight out of it.
Yeah, it was really cool. They recount how both men had won the top title. Miz was WWE champion. Daniel Bryan main evented WrestleMania, and he won the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at that point. And I actually thought this one ended up being just better than the last one. It was really cool, because they talked about how Bryan had to retire. It was the hardest thing he'd ever done.
But he knew his style would catch up with him, but he couldn't go out there and half-ass it.
Exactly. Because he always mocks Miz for being soft. Calling him a coward in the ring.
And Miz says, like, I've been wrestling for this long and I've never been injured because I go out there and I play it safe.
Which is really interesting. And it was talking about how he became SmackDown GM and started abusing his power, which led to this Talking Smack promo. And if you've never seen this Talking Smack promo, like, go out of your way to watch it, because it's the best work Miz has ever done in this company. Mm. He was 100% unscripted, and he just went off on one. And it really felt like years of pent-up frustration about people constantly telling him, you do realize you're not as good as Daniel Bryan.
Yes, yeah.
And just all these years of frustration, and it just pours out of him. And the way Daniel Bryan sort of like just doesn't say anything, he gets up and he walks away. Really, really awesome. And the real key to this video, this second video for me, was that, because Miz kept saying to him, like, why don't you quit? If you want to wrestle so bad, why don't you quit? And Bryan says in his talking headpiece, I wanted to quit. Like, I wanted to walk away from the company, but I made a promise to Vince McMahon that I would see out my contract. And that added a real level of realism that I think this feud has been missing. And this feud really could need it to feel real. Like, cause that's the sort of line there where you're like, I don't know how much of that is true or how much of that is just, you know, kayfabing it. And that's really awesome. It's really awesome for a feud in 2018. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's nice to actually be like, oh, I no longer see where the lines are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's blurring those lines. And then the last one was all about Bryan's return to the ring, about him making the announcement for WrestleMania.
I want to come back because I love wrestling.
Yeah, exactly.
Couldn't find a way to live without it, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. All the heartwarming stuff. But that was nice. Like, it was like I think the opening of that package where he comes back to the ring and he says, I've been cleared. I got me again.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Daniel Bryan.
Tugging at those heartstrings once again. And he talks about how he brought Miz across to SmackDown. That was his last command as GM before he stepped down. And then Miz cuts this awesome promo on the end of Daniel Bryan. And they're both looking into the camera and just shouting down about what they're going to do to each other at SummerSlam. This was such a good go-home angle, you know, or go-home video packages to hype you up for that SummerSlam match. This did so much more for my interest in this match than anything they've done previous to this.
Yes, yeah.
You know, in the last, you know, month or so, I thought these were really, really awesome. But the question is, at the top of the, you know, we'll get to it eventually, is it the best feud in WWE at the moment?
Main roster, I think so.
Yeah,
I think it's been given the time is the other thing. I think, like, you know, there were three packages this week about this. How many of the previous packages also main evented SmackDowns, like the launch party thing did? I felt like that, and then there are other things all been given,
like semi-main or something.
Yeah,
like
and then a lot of their other stuff has been given high billing, either finishing sort of the first half or coming just before the main event. So like it feels like this is really important. This is more build than AJ and Samoa Joe, you have to think, as well.
Well, absolutely, like, it is.
You know, they're obviously like it, and that's the weird thing about this is like it feels like this cannot just end at SummerSlam as well. Like, this is the other thing about it. 8 years has been building to this one match.
Yeah,
this is going to be like going on, I think, at least till WrestleMania.
Could they carry this on? I mean, Daniel Bryan did say in that Gorilla Position interview, which is a really good interview. Where he was like, I don't trust WWE to book that storyline for that long.
Yes.
But it is the sort of feud that, because you have got those 8 years to play with, and it is a real, like, as soon as Bryan was cleared, that was the match people were talking about.
Yes, yeah.
Can't wait for them to do Miz versus Bryan. That, you know, you could still extend this out, but knowing WWE, it'll be like, they'll do it again at Hell in a Cell, and then they'll do it again at whatever the pay-per-view is after that, which I think is Survivor Series. Well, it's not Survivor Series. There's one before Survivor Series, I think.
Well, what's the stupid thing is, because what's so good about this feud is because it's gone on so long,
Evolution?
And it hasn't always been, like, at the forefront of what both guys are doing. It can just go away and come back again.
Yeah.
And everyone will be like, oh, like it and
just
that's
picking
thing,
this up again.
Yeah, it's not like separate feuds that everyone's having. This is one feud that just goes on forever, I think. They're like mortal enemies at this point.
Yeah,
I think.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think it's, for me personally, it's not the feud I'm most interested in going into SummerSlam.
What is?
I think I'm more into Seth and Dolph. Only because through the Dean return, I'm really intrigued by that, and I really like Drew McIntyre's. And I'm very intrigued by the Roman Brock match. I'm very, very intrigued. The final angle didn't do a lot for me, but I thought all the stuff they did previous to that I thought was really, really good. And I'm really into Alexa Bliss, Ronda Rousey, and where that's going to go. So I don't know if I'd go as far as say it's the best. In the last month, I don't think it's been the best booked feud in WWE. But I would say it's probably the best booked feud on SmackDown. Maybe, I don't know, I quite like the women's match, but maybe I think it's the best booked feud on SmackDown. Certainly better than AJ Joe.
Which let itself down immensely this week.
It is. But at the same time, we'll come on to that. But at the same time of saying all that, these video packages did make me think, like, this is definitely the best view that WWE have right now. Because there's so much, like, there's so much drama and stuff you can pull from. I just wish they'd extrapolated more from this week than they did just the other nonsense. And Ollie said this before on the show, and I completely agree with him, that Miz and Mrs. really has hurt this feud. Because it felt like all the promos they were doing were not hyping the SummerSlam match. They were hyping the TV show that was coming up from the USA Network.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was more playing into that than it was the match. And that's what I think is where this feud has been hurt a little bit by Miz and Mrs.
Yeah, they could have hidden it a bit better. It couldn't have been so obvious, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's on after this. Dick, dick, diggity, dick, diggity, dog. Breaking. Dick, dick,
diggity, dick, diggity, dog. Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So SmackDown Live opened with the three women of their SummerSlam Triple Threat Women's Championship match coming down to the ring to stand in a row, because that's how natural people stand when they're talking to each other. And
facing the hard cap. Facing that's the how hard I always cap.
Right, exactly. And it was so, I mean, and in fairness, a lot of people say, like, well, you guys sit next to each other in a row. That's because I can touch the wall.
Yeah, we don't have enough space.
No, there's not enough space for me to do it.
We've also only got one camera.
We've only got one, it's a one camera setup. It more or less could be filmed in a bedroom. But Carmella's talking about how she feels like she's been picked on by Paige, more or less, because she's been put into an unfair situation here. She shouldn't have to face off against two challengers for her championship. And she always thinks it's ridiculous that they're doing this face-to-face-to-face scenario in the first place. And she calls herself a great champion, which isn't true at all. But then, like, then she kind of like switches around and starts to talk to Becky and say, like, you don't have a chance at winning in this match.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've beaten Charlotte twice. I've beaten Asuka twice. She won Hell in a Cell. Mm-hmm. She's a multi-time champion. She's won all these belts. You have no chance, mate.
You were the first SmackDown Women's Champion, but you only won that because Charlotte was on Raw.
Lovely. That was a really, really nice touch, yeah. And Becky talks about how, like, she goes, I'm going to be honest, I didn't want Charlotte in this match, but that's only because Charlotte is really, really good, which I thought was a nice little wrinkle in there. It's almost like that backhanded compliments, really, is that, you know, yeah, I mean, it's nice for you to be in this match, but I don't want you here.
Yeah, it'd be much better if you weren't.
Yeah, and she was like, I've been...
With all your really good moves and stuff.
Yeah, I've been thinking about, like, the one-on-one fight and things like that. But for me, Charlotte had the best line in this whole thing. She started cutting this promo on... And we knock Charlotte's promos a lot, quite rightly so. She's not a great promo, but she had a money line in this where she's talking about Carmen and she's like, you need to stop lying. You are not on the same level as everyone else in this division.
Yep.
Which again shows that they don't really know what this Carmella character is.
Because, yeah, you had to call out Ellsworth.
Yeah.
You can't hang with the rest of the roster.
Yeah. Which sort of does make sense, because Charlotte and Carmella has gone toe-to-toe with Charlotte on several occasions. So I think she is on the same level as you two. I mean, those two matches, she did more or less win clean. So I think she is on the same level. But we're kind of like forgetting that. And then she had this line, and I love this, where she called her a diva living in a woman's era. That is such a money line. And if that had been Carmella's character from the start, when she won the belt, she could have been a really, really great character and really built some awesome matches out of that.
She would have just been the female Miz.
But they didn't really know. They clearly don't really know what the Mella character is, because oftentimes she is a diva in a women's era. But as I say, oftentimes she does go toe to toe with wrestlers and she's good. They don't really quite know what she is. But I thought that line really summed it up of what her character should be. And I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, and then Carmella just goes with it.
Yeah.
She says, well, yeah, like, look at my beauty, look at my body, look at my charisma.
Yeah.
And then what have you got? You don't stand a chance. And Becky and Charlotte sort of look at each other like,
yeah, it's really interesting.
Sorry.
You want it because, like, Scarlett Bordeaux's doing a similar sort of character on Impact at the moment, where she's essentially saying,
the smoke show.
Yeah, she's essentially saying that, like, women's wrestling is grand and all, but we really should go back to the era where, like, being sexy was what it was important to a character, to a female character. So I think it's a really interesting character, by the way. But Paige comes out and she announces that we're going to have a tag team match. And thankfully, luckily, the two people she picked to have the wrestling match were the ones in their gear.
Yeah, it's quite useful.
And the one person doing the commentary was not in their gear. So it was very fortunate that Becky and Charlotte had come out in their gear for this segment.
I feel like, but it fits though as well, because the idea that Becky and Charlotte are looking for actual proving,
yes,
to prove themselves, yeah, and to wrestle, and Carmella is coming out to do what she does best, as Paige says, talk.
Yes, yap her gums. Which led into our first match of the evening, which was Becky and Charlotte taking on Absolution, Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose.
The worst bits of Absolution.
The worst bits of Absolution. And although I really like Sonya Deville, I'm a big fan of hers.
She is actually really good.
And, it was really funny, because, like, so Mella points out on commentaries, like, I didn't need James Ellsworth in order to beat Charlotte twice, which I thought was a nice little moment. But again, it proves that her character makes zero sense.
She says she was embarrassed by him falling out of the shark cage as well. I was embarrassed by that. I didn't ask him to do that.
Yeah, she kept, like, really just burying Byron as well, because every time Byron would say something, she was like, there's a buzzing in my headset. I can't hear what someone's saying.
She was, I'm done with you, Byron.
Yeah, it was great. After a while, she's like, no, I'm just done with you, Byron. Todd Phillips brought up that Paige, Charlotte and Becky were once a tag team together. They were once a team. And I was like, I genuinely forgot about Team PCB.
PCB.
I genuinely forgot that. That's how they made their main roster debuts.
Yes, yeah.
Very weird. Becky made to come back. So this match was, it wasn't really much of a match, but I thought the finish was awesome. I thought the finish was really clever and subtle, because it built off the tag match that it did last week with the Iconics, which was that Becky couldn't tap out Peyton Royce because Billy Kay interfered. And then Charlotte tagged herself in and she got the submission win. Mm. So this time, Becky was ready for it, because she knocks down Mandy Rose. Sonya Deville comes in and she turns around and she knocks out Sonya Deville as well. Doesn't tag in Flair, locks in the disarmer, and she gets the win. So it puts over that Becky knows she's learning of how to survive in this triple threat scenario. She doesn't need Charlotte Flair to win. I thought this was a really nice, subtle, because they weren't really playing this up on commentary either.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really nice, subtle way to build the SummerSlam match.
I would have loved to see them build the hot tag a bit more there, though. Like the it should have been teased a bit more, and then it should have been a bigger decision for Becky. While this was subtle, we did then go later on to see them talking about it. It would have been nice to, like, really tease the hot tag and that, like, she's not making it and she's really struggling. And then she just has this hella comeback and suddenly she's all over it, and then she lands the
disarmament. That's very true. Yeah, she becomes all Becky Balboa and straight fire and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Miz and Maryse announced that Miz and Mrs. is being renewed for a second season. So we'll get to hear about that, because not only are we going to hear about it for the next few weeks while it's still on, we'll then have to hear about the production of the new season and then when the new season airs. So I will say it now, I'm sick of hearing about that show.
Yeah. Even if it is awesome. The horrible little kiss they do as well.
I'm sick of hearing about Miz and Mrs. I can go a few weeks without hearing about it, to be honest.
Well, it's because also, like, the stuff they plug as well. What was the thing he was saying about, like, CPR, and he said Daniel Bryan will need CPR to revive his. So you can watch Miz and Mrs. tonight, where I'm learning CPR. It's like, who cares? Why?
Yeah, that was the other thing. Miz said this in the video. It's like, goes, I'm a reality TV star. That's what Daniel Bryan wants. I was like, mate, he's also a reality TV star. He's got two shows.
Yeah, and he really doesn't seem bothered.
He's really not asked about it. Backstage, Charlotte and Becky were sort of like celebrating their win with some water. And Becky said that she did it all by herself. Charlotte said, you didn't really need to do that all by yourself. And Becky was like, well, I didn't really realize. And, I just sort of did it.
Yeah.
So that was a really, really good line.
Little tea
thing. And they say that on Sunday, the best woman will win. And Becky said that she will. So very interesting whether they are going to do a heel turn, but it's like, it's weird as well, because it feels like there's three matches at the moment going into SummerSlam that have got these heel turn talks. You've got this match here. Is it going to be Charlotte? Is it going to be Becky? You've got Dean Ambrose now in the in the Seth Rollins match. Is he going to turn heel there? And you've got the Paul Heyman talk within the Brock Lesnar Roman Reigns match. Is he going to turn and side with And you can't really do Turner-mania. Like, you really, really should only pick one of those and do that.
Turner-slam.
Turner-slam, exactly. So the, so I think with that, with the three possibilities of teasers or teasers being turned, which one they'll go with, if any, really. They might not go with any of them.
Yeah, I don't feel like Becky necessarily needs it. Like, you can have her, like, because it works as a story both ways. Like,
yes.
She either overcomes the fact that her best mate's in this match and wins anyway, loses, and then just builds to a match between the two of them down the line. And, you know, you don't have to have a heel in that sense.
You do not.
Or Charlotte could be the heel in this regard as well. Yes, I just, I don't think it necessarily, like, Becky has proved herself more than capable of dealing with two other people now.
Yes.
So maybe she just will, without having to cheat or turn heel on Charlotte.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, like, how often do WWE, like, tease women's heel turns? Like,
yeah.
How long was Sasha and Bayley going
on
for?
Oh, don't even get me
But
start.
Now they're just
best friends now, aren't they?
They've got matching jackets.
I do.
Yay.
Do like those matching jackets, though. The Bludgeon
Sweet
Brothers.
Jackets,
the Bludgeon Brothers took on the Triple Threats.
Dun, dun, dun. The most wrestling of wrestling names.
They were. So they were three enhancement talents from the local area from, I can't remember where they were.
They were just three dudes.
Three dudes. One three of them dudes. Had the Motorhead logo on his singlet there, which I thought was funny.
Ooh.
And the Bludgeon Brothers essentially just beat them down. Actually, the match didn't even start. It was...
I thought that was so weird.
I thought it was really weird as well, because it was announced as a match.
Yeah.
But then Bludgeon Brothers just stopped beating them up.
And then, yeah, well, It was because, like, you see them come out and they're like, they call themselves the Triple Threat, and I was like, I smell a squash, and then the Bludgeons come out and you're like, okay, and then they just, like, there was some really cool beatdowns.
So awesome.
So there was like Harper and Rowan. Rowan power slams one of them.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry, Harper power slams one of them. Rowan then power slams one of them, and then they power slam one of the Bludgeon Brothers onto the top of the two of them.
It was such an awesome beatdown.
They had one guy laid on the apron and they got the other guy up and then just flung his head into the other guy's torso. I was like, what is that?
It was awesome. Some really innovative stuff in here. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. But it, there is that weird moment of like, why didn't you just have them win?
Why didn't you? But like, they didn't need, because it didn't even need to be an actual pin. Like, how hard is it? Well, how long is a pin?
You 3 seconds.
3 seconds. So why didn't they just, when they'd done their big move in the middle, just put a foot on the guy.
Yeah.
One, two, three, and you can play the music.
Exactly, like, yeah. Or stack all three of them up and put your foot onto all three of them.
Yeah, because there is literally no point in just going, well, that's a no contest.
Like, exactly, yeah. Because in reality, Triple Threat have got, they've got a record now in WWE. Yeah.
It took longer to explain the fact that it wasn't a match than it would have to just to finish the match and then play the music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it was a fun beatdown regardless.
It was very fun.
We got that first Miz and Daniel Bryan video, and then we got the second half of that SummerSlam match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, where the New Day with Birthday Boy Kofi Kingston were taking on
a little sign.
Yeah, we're taking on Sanity and Killian Dane's new ring gear.
Yeah, that's what I'm just. All I've written, Killian Dane has a nice singlet. It covers up that hair.
Yeah, I've written, Killian Dane has new gear. It's rubbish.
It is rubbish.
It doesn't really work for him.
It makes him look like a big baby.
It makes him look like a wrestler. And I thought the whole point of Sanity is that he didn't really look like wrestlers. They just looked like these chaotic madmen.
Well, I think the idea was he was told to wear that because
he's so hairy,
he's so
and gross.
Damn hairy.
Yeah, it's definitely a Vince thing of just like, you look disgusting and gross.
Yeah.
I feel
they could have just built it out of his gear already. He could have just carried on wearing the belt thing and then just built out the top half.
Exactly,
like, I don't know why it had to be a complete change, wear a singlet.
Yeah. It's the same reason why Baron Corbin wrestles in a shirt now.
Yeah.
I think Vince just said, like, I don't like looking at your body.
Yeah.
Now, please wear a shirt. Because when he came up to the main roster, he was wearing a vest, because clearly he'd been told your body is not good enough to be on camera. Wear a vest.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few. Dean Ambrose, when he first debuted and he was wrestling in The Shield, there was always these stories, apparently, they used to try and like rip off his jacket to expose his body, because Vince thought his body was rubbish. And it was almost like a little bit of a hazing thing for him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was always the reports that came out
about it. Well, not anymore, Vince!
Not anymore, mate. Absolutely not anymore, because he has had some cod liver oil. Crowd lovingly start chanting happy birthday to Kofi, which was really sweet. Yeah, this match was SummerSlam promos and ad breaks.
Yeah,
but
it was terrible.
By the time that stuff was done, it actually turned into a really decent little match. There was Woods made a... Killian Dane was sort of running wild, and then Woods made this awesome comeback, and he hit a really cool move, and then Eric Young broke that up with an elbow drop.
Yeah, there was always like... I think they always do a lot of really cool stuff the New Day whenever they're in the ring. There was a good bit where Kofi leapfrogged Big E into a splash that looked... brutal,
yeah.
Because he didn't quite go far enough, so he just landed full on Eric Young, who just like Eric Young was like Loki in the first Avengers film, just which was really good. And then yeah, there was the huge SummerSlam advert. Funnily enough, all the SummerSlam adverts were promoting Raw matches.
Well, the two big matches on the show are Rousey Bliss and Lesnar Roman.
But I don't think they would. Yeah, but they obviously wouldn't. That wouldn't happen to promote them. If they were SmackDown matches, they wouldn't go, oh, let's cut out of this match to promote a match that we're already having.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, SmackDown and Raw are supposed to be competing brands.
Yeah,
they're not supposed to be promoting each other. But, you know, it's the best of both brands
it's really
now.
Dumb.
My favourite spot this match, actually, though, was you had Woods. Wolf was on the floor after they did this elbow drop spot. So he'd, you know, taken the move. And then Eric Young gets up Xavier Woods to do a Death Valley driver. And Killian Dane, not Killian Dane, Xander Wolf puts his knees up. So they did this Death Valley driver into the knees. It was such a cool spot. That was wicked.
There was also a crazy blockbuster thing that Wolf did where Dane had Kofi, this was in the beatdown, I think in the break, Dane had Kofi like in sort of, I guess, a Uranagi sort of position, and then Wolf flips off the top. And I've written here also that Kofi was just getting the birthday bumps while he was waiting for the hot tag.
Yeah. It's very nice. But New Day hit the impressively hit the up, up, down, down on Killian Dane. So Big E hoisted him up on his shoulders. Nice of them to use Dane, because that puts over the idea that they're facing these bigger guys at SummerSlam, which I thought was a nice little, nice touch.
Well, they got a big pop for that as well. As soon as Big E lifted him, there was a moment where everyone stopped for a bit and was like, whoa!
That's crazy.
And like, even Xavier Woods on the turnbuckle was like, fair.
Cool. Yeah, sweet. Nice work.
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice little touch. It sucks that Sanity lose again, but at the same time, New Day are the ones that are going for the belt at the moment.
Yeah.
Maybe after SummerSlam, Nikki Cross gets called up, and that's the injection that Sanity needs in order to get somewhere. But whether they are going to call Nikki Cross up, like, that's the question, is are they going to bother calling Nikki up?
I think they will, because NXT is about to get a big injection of women's talent from the Mae Young Classic. So,
I mean, Nikki was only kept there because they lost a massive amount of women, female talent they had in NXT, like Iconics and Riot Squad and all these other people, because they had to do the Royal Rumble. Mm. So Nikki Cross had to stay there because they were like, well, now we've got no other women. So they had to, they was actually had to rebuild that division up from scratch. But as you say, they've now got a big influx coming in from the Mae Young Classic that should help them. And Nikki Cross has been working SmackDown live events.
Yes.
So, I mean, she was on Raw. She was on Raw a couple of weeks ago when they announced the Evolution thing.
Yeah,
and you could tell she was there because she was at the front, because she's like 3'10". They're like, put the small ones at the front.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, because they won't be able to see otherwise.
And she's going, ha-ha.
Yeah, exactly. You're
brilliant.
Playing into a kind of, ha-ha.
Brilliant.
So I think I assume she'll get called up soon, but whether they do it after SummerSlam. They usually do NXT call-ups after SummerSlam, so we'll see there. Backstage, Paige walks up to Samoa Joe's locker room and she knocks on the door. It was announced earlier in the night that AJ is going to be doing a promo later on addressing the SummerSlam match. And she was there to essentially say, don't go out because I need to protect my SummerSlam main event. And
I like the fact she said she asked him to go out and speak. He refused. I asked you to go out and speak, and you refused. And Joe just goes, I'm shy.
Yeah, it's very. Yeah, it's like, I don't want to do a promo, I'm shy. It was very good. I really liked that. But he said that she asked him not to go out for AJ's promo, and he says that he'd do what he damn well pleases.
Yeah, he said, you like me because of my killer instinct, because I'm unpredictable.
Yeah.
Which makes him quite predictable, because then you know he's going to go out during AJ's promo.
Yeah, well, to be honest, what he did in that promo, I would not have predicted.
No.
In all fairness to him, I did not see this coming.
No.
So,
true.
Maybe
we'll
he was right. Yeah. I mean, I can't wait to see what destructive thing he does. But
Because he's like, I'll do whatever I please and everyone else will have to deal with the consequences. Think about the consequences when we talk about it later on of What could possibly be the consequences of what he actually did?
I mean, this is a lot of setup. I hope there's some payoff later on.
Ooh.
We'll get to it. Aiden English sang a song, an apology song, about hurting Lana and Rusev for the last couple of weeks, where he's cost Lana her match with Zelina Vega, and he's kind of like, he didn't help Rusev when he was fighting Almas and things like that. So he sung this song, and he wanted to challenge Almas to a match to kind of like fight for the honor of Rusev Day, which didn't really go well for him because Andrade won.
Yeah, I mean,
very easily. This started in the ad break, and then Andrade won. Those are basically my two notes I have on this.
There was a cool bit where Andrade flung Aiden into the turnbuckles upside down. That looked cool, and that was and then he hit all of his good moves. Cool.
His back elbow is very cool.
I love the back elbow.
It's wicked.
The back elbow into the knees, into the hammerlock, and then one, two, three, it was done.
So awesome.
Only thing I liked about this, I liked the song. It was all right. I like the fact that Aiden English also really sold looking a bit heartbroken and disheveled and like he was troubled by this whole thing and actually trying to make it up to them. Like he did that really well. However, the implosion of Rusev Day and hopefully the eventual feud between Aiden English and Rusev, I'm not bothered about, you know?
No, I would certainly agree with that. But, I mean, I said this in the SmackDown review, but it's had more build than AJ Joe. Like, this has actually had a storyline.
Mm.
So, I mean, maybe we're getting a storyline now with AJ and Joe, but we'll get to that. We've got the second part of, the final part, rather, of Brian's return.
At the end of that match, though, Rusev and Lana cut promos.
And they Lana sort of had an accent and then sort of didn't.
Yeah, I've written that. She said Lana Day or whatever in the sort of
accent. We will crush you. And she was like,
"We will crush you at SummerSlam.
And it will be Lana Day."
Yeah. Just forgot halfway through.
Yeah. Bless her heart. I don't think she knows because she has not really been doing the accent. But she still has a T-shirt with the Russian logo, the Russian flag on it. So this is the Russian logo.
Yeah, yeah. And she's the Russian logo.
Yeah, that's what flags are, really. It's just logos for countries.
get a little Adidas jacket with the stripes.
And then we got our final match of the evening, which was Jeff Hardy versus Shelton Benjamin, of all people, who didn't get an entrance because this match once again started in the ad break. And then as soon as it got back from the ad break, they were like, SummerSlam promo. Mm. But like the six-man, this did get good by the end, and Hardy won with a twist of fate. It was funny because he hit the twist of fate and then did this big old dive into the pin that almost looked like he'd done a splash.
And they said, and then a splash. It was like... Oh, okay.
I think he was just diving for the pin.
I don't get what Jeff Hardy's up to at the moment. Like, I don't like the whole spooky thing with the face paint. Like, so the promo at the beginning, so like before he came out for the match and before we got there, because then we actually, the ad break replayed the Popeyes food fight with the, who threw the pie at Kevin Owens?
Who did?
We still don't know. But Jeff Hardy, like, did the eye thing where it's like you're looking into his eyes, but they're really badly painted on, first of all. And then he opens his eyes up. And then he just went...
Yeah.
And it reminded me... Have you seen 30 Days of Night?
Yes, many years ago. I've only seen it in the pictures. I haven't seen it since.
Yeah, it's a terrible vampire film.
That's unfair. I thought it was all right.
It was a terrible vampire film. So there's a whole bit, and there's one scene in it where they're in this house and the vampires are hunting them by smell. And this vampire just is walking through this house just going... And it's the least threatening thing I've ever seen until Jeff Hardy reminded me of it this week.
Amazing. So Jeff went with the Twist of Fate, and then Nakamura came out because they've got a match at SummerSlam. And Benjamin sort of caused a distraction, which allowed Nakamura to get an early attack in. But as he set up for the Kinshasa, he ran into a Twist of Fate and a Swanton. But who was watching from the back? Creepily behind a curtain was Randall K. Orton. And
he was hiding from the police.
And it really did. Well, I mean, alleged stories.
Allegedly, yeah, we got after him for a decent exposure.
Yeah, we got the story of this on Monday if you want to go check that out. So I think Randy being here and them still setting up this Jeff Hardy match tells you everything you need to know about how seriously WWE are treating those allegations.
Oh, yeah. They do not care.
Because he was just on TV this week and everything is just like, they're just going to sweep that under the rug.
Well, unfortunately, it's one of those things where, you know,
no one has made a complaint.
Yeah, no one's made a complaint. I guess he exposed himself, potentially exposed him, or allegedly exposed himself to somebody. However, it's not assault in that regard. So it's probably, and also, like, if no one's made an actual formal complaint, You can just go. Oh,
yeah. So it should tell you everything you need to know about WWE looking into this. That Randy was here doing his best impression of John Lovitz from The Wedding Singer, where he's like, he is losing his mind, and I am reaping the benefits. But the main event of this show was what we've been teasing all this show, really. It was AJ Styles coming out to cut a promo. And as soon as they announced this earlier in the night, but I've been very down on the build for AJ Joe. Since, yeah. Because the start of Joe laid him out with the clutch and then he signed the contract. And I'm like, that's badass. That's really cool. And then Joe followed that up by cutting a promo. And then AJ followed that up by cutting a promo. Yeah. And then they were going to end this with AJ cutting a promo. And I was like, gee, oh, come on, lads. But this is not difficult to get wrong.
Well, that's the thing. The intro to it, brilliant. However, I think you said as well that it should have been Joe wasn't scheduled for the match.
No.
It would have been better if he just come out and just took it.
Signed the contract, yeah, and that's why he's unpredictable.
He's like, here you go, got a contract now. And then I thought his promo was amazing. Like,
It was a great promo.
He cut on AJ was
so
great.
Good.
However, it would have been good to see AJ come out with a bit more fire to that.
Yes.
Because, AJ came out again this week and was saying, you know, that got me really worked up and I went to a really dark place. And then my wife, Wendy, said...
Make sure you drop the name.
Yeah, make
name
sure
day.
You drop the name Wendy. Wendy said, you need to calm down, you need to keep your head...
you need to keep your head cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I thought was really weird, because he says that, he goes, since Joe's attack and Joe's promo, and he obviously showed clips of it to make sure it's all staged, he said that I've been losing my cool, and I thought, have you?
Yeah.
Because I've not seen that.
He's not been losing his cool, and he's also, while he's giving out this speech and getting a bit worked up, pausing for video packages.
Yeah, I know what that's mean. He's like, I need to show you on the video package in case you've missed the last 2 weeks. Here's what's happened, which I've never liked anyway. I genuinely thought he was going to throw to a video package of him cutting a promo.
Well, they should have just done the video package at the beginning.
Yes.
Like, here, let's recap this really quickly.
Absolutely.
And then AJ can come down and just say his piece. And that's fine.
Sir-bloody exactly. Could not agree with you more. But anyway, so he's cutting this promo. It's not particularly great. It's not great content. It's not AJ's fault. It's not great content. It's like the promo last week.
Yeah.
AJ's he's a good promo. He's just not been given good content. And Joe comes out. Now, Joe is an awesome promo. I was like, this would be cool. We're going to have a war of words instead. And then we can build up to a big old showdown and a confrontation. But oh no, Joe has a letter. Joe has a letter which he is going to read. And it's a letter from a fan. And the way he reads it, it's very funny the way he's reading it. But he said the letter from the fan who said that the things that Joe said in his promo 2 weeks ago are true. As that AJ wants to remain WWE champion so he doesn't have to go home to his wife and kids.
He never wanted children.
Never wanted
or a wife.
But the alleged person who wrote this letter is the biggest AJ Styles fan in the world. So they're saying all of these things like, yeah, you're right. Mm. I want you to win the WWE championship. And it ends with, from AJ's biggest fan, Wendy Styles.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the crowd are all like, his wife wrote the letter. And I went, oh, I'm getting Claire Lynch vibes from all of this. Oh, no, I don't want this to turn into Claire Lynch.
And then it just stopped.
Ended it.
That
just
was the end.
That was it. And I saw that was your SummerSlam go-home angle.
Yeah.
That is supposed to make you go like, man, I cannot wait to see them fight at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Like, this was rubbish. That's my last note, is it? Well, that was effing rubbish. It was absolutely awful.
I can't wait to see the strongly worded reply.
What's Joe's plan? AJ's going to go home. Like, did you write a letter? No. Cool. Right. Well, move on with the rest of my day then. Because clearly Wendy didn't write that letter. It's Joe playing mind games. But those mind games don't work.
No.
Unless Wendy Styles is being introduced as a character, in which case we are stepping into Claire Lynch territory. And that's a bad sign. AJ has a track record with these sorts of things.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the match actually has the potential to still be, irregardless of this, brilliant.
Yeah. It's a 6-hour show. If this match is given time, it will be very, very good.
Yeah. However, if this is just a filler, this was obviously someone just going, well, we just need something for AJ to do. We need something for Joe to do.
Yeah.
There you go. There's a feud.
And can you imagine that's the way you looked at AJ versus Samoa Joe? You were like, well, we need the guys to do something.
We did it completely in the wrong order. Like, you started with the coolest thing, then you had the second week where it was still pretty hot, but like, you could have started with Joe cutting a promo, then built to the bit where he gets himself signing a contract or whatever. Like, you know,
it's just outstanding that this company has got AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the WWE Championship at SummerSlam, arguably the second biggest show of the year if you don't look at the Royal Rumble. And it's, this is the program. It's a soap opera storyline.
Yeah.
How do you do this?
Yeah. It's, look what Joe did with Brock.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Joe got a Brock Lesnar match, the hottest thing
in the company
that was going to happen.
And that was supposed to be a filler feud. Yeah. But Joe got so over during that because he's so good that he ended up getting put into the SummerSlam four-way last year. Unreal. But, you know, I mean, I sound like I'm being down. I did actually, in total, really enjoy this show. And I gave it a core rating. Ollie Davis told me he would have given it a low smack bang in the middle, which is a 2.5 out of 5.
I think that, for me, that was probably, that was about right. Maybe even slightly lower. I just thought, I find it weird that SmackDown now has about 4 matches on it, which is about as much as you get on NXT, and that is 1 hour shorter.
Yep.
So, and like, you could just do matches that ran longer and told more of the story through people doing the things that they do, which is wrestling, rather than having people have to explain every single thing that's going on. Useless letters. Jeff Hardy go for no reason, and then playing a load of clips promoting matches from Raw.
I said this in the review, but I thought my score was generous. Like, last week I gave it 3.5 out of 5, which I thought was a decent score. Mm. I probably should have given this the same, really. But I did very much enjoy the ending of the Becky Lynch match. I loved all the Daniel Bryan Miz matches because that actively got me excited for a match. That's
they were
good.
Good. Yeah, they
and
were good.
And the finish of the Becky match got me intrigued and excited for their match, despite the fact that Carmella's in it, and I think it's going to be a bit pants. Mm. And I thought that the tag team stuff was pretty good as well. Like, despite the fact that the matches were hampered by the ad breaks and by the bloody SummerSlam promos, they did really pick up after that. Yeah. And I did enjoy them. You know, the 3 or 4 minutes they actually did get to wrestle, I thought were good.
Once again, though, when the wrestlers wrestle, the wrestling show is good.
Yeah, it really
but the bits,
is.
The bits, it's the production of it is just, oh,
so you'd have gone.
Makes me cross.
So you'd have gone with a 2 out of 5 in Ellsworthy.
I think I would have gone with an Ellsworthy.
An Ellsworthy.
It's just, I just cannot bear watching promo after promo that are just weird, don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
The Miz and Daniel Bryan stuff was great, but it was also so much of the show and could have been any of the other weeks.
Yeah.
We could have just seen it before. Absolutely. I just thought it hung together so weirdly, this show.
Yeah.
But all the wrestling was pretty top quality, actually.
I said this, I think, on last week's show and the weeks previous to that, because the week previous to that was promo heavy. Like, there was only 3 matches in the 2 hours, and all of those had like the ad break nonsense as well. It was so promo heavy and in ring heavy. And
then I should name it Talking Smack.
Hey, and then last week was a slightly better balance of it. And then this week, and you had all the Daniel Bryan Miz stuff, which took up probably about a third of the show, was these video packages. You could have just spread all of that out. If you'd have laid out, this is our 4-week plan, and then just spread out the bits that you were doing with wrestling matches, longer wrestling matches, without the ad breaks and stuff, it would have been a much, much stronger build towards SummerSlam. Because all the individual components are very good, but they were all coming very odd, with the exception of the letter, and have all come in very odd points, and the baby throwing. There's a lot of stuff, actually, I didn't like. But
funnily enough,
I think there was a lot. If you'd have peppered stuff throughout, it might have been better.
I think it's just because they're just desperately looking for different ways of doing stuff that isn't just the classic wrestling stuff, and it's all got to be like, let's have a launch party, he's on set here, let's do this, but they don't do it outside of their own little world of just like, well, we just have to do it in the arena. Or, you know, it's just like, go somewhere else and film something, throw some money at something else. Like, how much money must you make from just the people present at an episode of SmackDown?
Yes. So I think a lot of the Podswafters might know, and I think a lot of the Swaff Nationals know as well, that you and I play D&D together. We play Dungeons & Dragons together.
We do indeed. It's our dirty secret.
It's our dirty secret. And this week, you stepped out of the realm of player to be our Dungeon Master.
Parked Arter.
Exactly.
See you later, mate. Don't know where you are. No idea.
I'm a bit concerned about him, I'll be honest.
I'm sure we'll find out when we play again and our regular Dungeon Master, George, takes back over and tells me where my character has gone.
I mean, I can only assume where we have been sent to one dimension, he's just been sent to another plane of existence.
I believe so.
Yeah, that would be my thinking.
As far as I know.
So how did you find, like, jumping into the DM role? I mean, I know it's not your first rodeo.
Yeah, no, I was more nervous about doing this than I was So I've previously GM'd a few games with one of the other companies I work for, Explosive Alum. However, none of them have played Dungeons & Dragons. One of them played it when they were a kid, but has forgotten the rules and hasn't ever played 5e. So I was sort of like, I am God. What I tell you goes. Because they were just like, what do I do? And I was like, roll me a dice. If that happens, they just do it. So in this scenario, I was a bit more, because we've obviously developed slight house rules about things and we do things our particular way. And also, you guys all know the gist of it. So I was a bit nervous to be like, what if this isn't what you're expecting it to be when I'm doing it rather than when George is doing it? But it was fine. I was also nervous at the idea of having not written enough. So to give you a brief description of what's previously happened, we had a fight on a mountaintop with a woman who was a fallen cleric who was trying to resurrect her dead husband, but accidentally managed to summon some other thing from the other side.
And we had a brilliant plan of how to...
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
We had this brilliant plan of how to... Because we thought getting into a fight with her is going to be very difficult. So one of our Dragonborn has the ability to be able to disguise himself as anyone. As long as he can see that person, he can make himself look like them. Yep. So he cast this spell...
We had a picture of him.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
Of the dead husband.
So he cast himself to look like her dead husband, with the idea that he would then approach her and talk her out of what she was doing. But he didn't do a particularly good job of it, and then failed his which role did he fail? Persuasion.
He's failed persuasion. The problem is Petty Cash, who is our dragonborn sorcerer but also a thief, doesn't listen to you when you tell him what to do. So he quite often forget, and I'm talking about the real person playing the game, not the character. The real person, every time you go through a plan, forgets it immediately and goes, what we did? So he walked up and went, I'm here, or something to that effect. She then rolled persuasion, rolled terribly. She looked at him for a second like, and then looked down at the bundle that we'd all forgot to look at, which was the body of her husband that she had brought from where she was keeping it, I assume his grave, and went,
No, you're not! and then a big war broke out.
And then a huge fight broke out. So that all that happened. This was the end of our first campaign. As we were leaving what was a temple to sorcery, I guess, at the time?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, so as we were leaving the temple... we passed through it, sort of disintegrating around us as it was a completely magical realm, and it became this black void, and that is where I started the campaign that we've started doing. So I started them off in this void, and the idea is that they've crossed into the Feywild and they don't know how to get back at the moment.
Exactly, but we have an idea, because I've spoken to someone and they've kind of given me a hint of what I need in order to be able to get back.
And you've also had a dream.
And I had a very scary dream.
Yeah, so... So the idea is they've crossed into the Feywild and they have to work out how to get back, and that is basically what's happening so far. However, so I spent all this time writing, and the idea was that I've written this opening scenario, because we now have to introduce the previous DM George as a character. He's now playing a necromancer called
Mortimer
Wilhelm von Hoffmann.
Yep. Doesn't like being called Mort, I discovered that.
He doesn't like being called Mort. He's also a bit kooky and a bit crazy. He's been living in the Feywild for far too long. And is trying to some degree, work out how to resurrect his son. That's kind of his jam. That was kind of... all that intro stuff I thought we'd get through really quickly. So like, I had this whole thing where they go into the Feywild, they see all this stuff, and then they hear this cry, and they find Mortimer drowning in a lake. And the bundle that is his son wrapped up is floating off ahead of him. So you would all dive in, and then you have this fight against this huge water hag. But it's a homebrew water hag, so it's not actually as weak as a regular one would be. That's wearing a wedding dress, and she bursts out of the water and fights the party and tries to steal the baby. And but unfortunately, you manage to stop that happening, and you get it. And so I thought that would happen quite quickly. I thought we'd race through all of that and we would get to the town, which is Harvest Glamour, which you know the name of, so I can say that here.
I've
already given away some stuff that I probably shouldn't have. bad DM. So yeah, I thought all that would happen, and then my idea for Harvest Glamour was that the path forward from there, as it's trying to find out what's going on is going to be a mystery. So I've been writing all these different little setups to be like, you could go this way, or you could do this, or you could speak to that man and he'll tell you where to go, or you could find this thing and that'll do that. But then if you find this thing, there's all these other things that come off in various different spirals. And I've been writing frantically for like 2 weeks being like, what if we get to all of this, and what if they don't do any of it and they go to the next thing and I've got to write that? Wrote all of it, and the guys just spent about half an hour in the void going, I talk? What happens?
Yeah,
well, I touch the floor.
In
what
our defense,
happens?
In our defense,
I walk 15 feet away and just feel around and see if anything's there.
In our defense, we landed in this area and instantly we all kind of locked eyes on each other and we all thought, this is a puzzle.
Mm.
So we all started to try and work out what the puzzle was. Turns out the answer was walk in front of you for a little while. I think it was like you have to walk for about an hour and you start to find.
Yeah, lights. The idea was that it was just sort of a transitional.
Yes, light. Which makes complete sense. But I don't know why every single one of us thought this is a trap. Like, it's not a trap.
No.
It's a puzzle that we have to solve in order to be able to escape this area. And then when we sort of encountered George's character, two of our party became very, very obsessed with
Ranulph.
With his child, Ranulph.
Yeah.
And would not let it go. And they ended up getting into a massive, like, magic battle.
They
like,
almost killed him.
Outside of the combat, and the combat took longer than planned as well because we rolled very poorly.
She was meant to be... That hag was meant to be hard as well.
I get that it was meant to be hard.
I wanted it to be difficult.
But it did go, like, multiple rounds.
Yes, yeah.
Probably longer than it needed to.
I think it was fun because in the sense that, like, I think the... It went longer because of the rolls. However, it was quite good because there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and, like... every time she almost got away, you stopped her. Every time you almost got away, she stopped you. Yeah. I think it actually worked out quite nicely.
It was a nice little battle, actually. It was frustrating, I think, for poor old Dan, who's our half-orc, who didn't nail a single successful roll.
He didn't hit. Well, he killed her in the end. He got the final blow with his axe.
But he didn't. That was like about the only damage he'd
done.
That
was, yeah, but he got the final blow. and then the party... So the idea is that... Ranulph, the baby, is just a corpse, and it's been badly stitched together as Mortimer has tried over the years to resurrect in various different ways. But when first encountered, Mortimer doesn't share that information and just says, "Help my son, she's stealing my son," and
yes.
the child is all swaddled up and wrapped in a papoose, and you can't really see. However, everyone was trying to play with the baby.
Well, so you say everyone.
Well, Torin.
Torin, Paladin, was trying to play with it. And Dragonborn was just... He instantly was like, don't trust him. He's weird. That baby's not his. And just wanted to steal the baby.
Yep. And so there was a whole bit where they...
Just got into a massive magic battle.
There was a whole bit where they nicked the baby off him, turned it invisible for a bit, and then Mortimer had to wrest it back off them, stored it in his magical bag, that is one of the handy haversacks for people who play D&D. But for everyone else, it's a dimensional portal bag that can hold much more stuff than you would imagine and doesn't actually get any bigger. So he shoved it in there and then went back into his hut and barricaded himself in. At which point, Petty Cash's solution to the entire problem of how do we get out of the Feywild? How do we deal with this man? Was let's just burn the house down with both of them in it.
I had to proper stop him at that point. I was like,
because at that point, I'd gone to the toilet and they were discussing the plan, and I came back, and everyone was just like, Petty has come up with an awful plan, an awful, awful plan,
terrible idea to burn this house down. And I thought, because they were like, we've got to kill this man. And Torin, because he's a paladin, he's chaotic neutral, I believe.
He is chaotic neutral. But his whole, obviously, being a paladin, his whole thing is to quash evil. I didn't quite consider the fact that he would cast Detect Good and Evil.
Yeah.
I cast Detect Good and Evil, and I was like, oh, yeah. Is there any evil? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Flipping loads. Because I wouldn't say, well, I don't want to spoil it. But
yeah.
It's more complex than it initially seems. It's not so cut and dry. It's much more shades of grey.
Exactly.
And I had to try to explain to Torin, ideally, if you could not kill George's character, that would be great, because Otherwise, I'm going to have to come up with a lot of other solutions to a lot of problems down the line and give George another character.
Well, we were on the tube going back together, and he just turned to me and was like, I really hope I don't have to kill George's character. I was like, you don't have to kill George's character. You're making that choice. Right, so we were going to do a couple of Rusev Hayes, but actually we've run out of time. So that is all we've got time for today. We're going to be back tomorrow with a bonus podcast, which is going to be NXT TakeOver 4 predictions. And then we'll be back the following day with our SummerSlam predictions. That's our three-man booth, which is going to be very, very exciting. Then on Saturday, we've got the usual magazine show and the WOS episode 4 review. Then on Sunday, it's going to be an NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4 review show with Laurie and Ollie. And then SummerSlam the following day after that, with Laurie and Ollie again reviewing that show. And then Raw and SmackDown after that. So you've got plenty of podcasts to get through, multiple, more hours than SummerSlam will likely
moisturize run. Moisturize your ears, because we're coming for them.
But until then, we'll see you later. I love you. Goodbye. Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos. But that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling, featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.